Welcome to the Maria Heller Show, the internet's original podcast. Since the year 2000, always ahead of the curve, always on your side. A true warrior for truth and justice, Maria and her guests leave nothing out, and no one is off limits. There is only one truth, the rest is lies. Sit back, enjoy the education with a true daughter of Mother Earth. Sharp New York wit, spiritual knowing, and a very dry sense of humor, Maria will dissect the news and lies to make it all palatable. Education is power. Maria delivers rapid-fire truth like no one else can. Here she is, the mouth that roars, the legendary Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to hell and high water. There's a lot of hell out there, and we're going to bring the high water to it with myself and Chuck Ocelli. If you're not familiar with Chuck, Chuck is one of the few independent news sites like my own that I actually trust, a thinking person for thinking people. So if you're not familiar with Chuck's work, get over to his site, subscribe. It's Ocelli.com. There's a live link right here to it. Good morning, Chuck.
Well, good morning, Maria. You know, it's a strange world we live in where I used to comment about things like music and the media and news that wasn't always hard-hitting. But nowadays, I'm being forced into that zone where you belong, usually, which is, let's talk about getting centered and getting ourselves back to our natural selves, and what does that mean? Why are we not in touch with the earth? Things like that. Now, that's not usually the subject matter you hear from me, but where I've had to go lately, why? Because that's where the solution really is. But we're not going to talk all about solutions right this minute because, like you said, there's a lot of hell, and hell is not part of the solution, is it?
No, it isn't. You know, it's kind of funny hearing you say that because this month actually begins my 18th year doing this show. And when I started doing this show, I started it the same way as you, talking about music, spinning some tunes from the 60s, telling people what it used to be like, throw in a little astrology, a little bit of news, and then Bush ran for office. And that was the end of my happy days doing the show. So welcome to my world.
Yeah, but look, we unfortunately don't create the times we live in. On a global scale, but we are responsible to contribute to them, right?
Well, you know, we have to just report on what is, you know, what is and what could be. You know, what could be is all about spirituality. It seems every day, you know, there's a late-breaking story. Every morning when I wake up, it's another huge story. So the bombardment of news coming at us, some of it distraction, some of it is so deep that I've never worked harder than the last 6 months. And it's just crazy stuff. But I did want to start today's show. I don't know if you've seen the documentary. I just got to see it last night. 9/11, 15 years later, based on the French brothers that were filming the firehouse and one probie in New York right before 9/11, and they're the ones, of course, whose film was shown everywhere after 9/11. Dennis Leary hosted it. It was held at, you know, between the 9/11 Memorial and the 9/11 Museum. And I have to tell you, it was 2 hours. I think it was originally put together by CNN. And I sat there and I said, do I really want to watch this? You know how I feel. I'm sure you can relate.
Because look, after a while, this thing has been repackaged and retold and repackaged. I think HBO, the History Channel, I mean, various media outlets have utilized the film. Even those that call themselves 9/11 truthers have utilized the footage to explicitly make certain points. So this is certainly not something that we should be unfamiliar with in any way, shape, or form. It is actually well shot, considering the fact that they were following a completely different subject. As you noted right there, the documentary was really about a fireman going from learning how to be a fireman at the academy to being involved directly there in New York City, right?
Right. And, you know, so I said, well, all right, I'll give it a few minutes because it was 2 hours long. I didn't know if I wanted to commit to 2 hours.
Would have been my exact attitude. I have not seen it yet, but I guarantee you if I had been looking through documentaries, I would have thought exactly the same thing.
Right.
Let's see what they're going to do with the same old footage.
Go right. Ahead. Well, I said, well, here's one I didn't see. So maybe I'll give it a few minutes. Actually, I watched it on Hulu. So if anybody's listening and you want to see it, it's on Hulu. I'm sure it's on YouTube too. But I did post right after I watched it. I made a big long post. I forwarded it to a lot of 9/11 groups on Facebook, and everybody agreed with my commentary on it. That's surprising because I never get 100%, you know, agreement on anything I post. But what I noticed was, you know, when you know the difference and you know the truth, and you look at something like this, first of all, it was a wonderful tribute to the firefighters. Without question of a doubt, I have always said firemen are the real heroes. They don't go around killing people for traffic violations. And they take their lives in their hands every day. The way they took the firefighters, you saw them, how they were, you know, how young they were on 9/11. You see them now. They all have post-traumatic stress disease. They all are still dying from, you know, ground zero diseases. I was very much noticed how so many of those firemen for weeks and days were going in there. They weren't even wearing masks. They had no protection on them. And remember Giuliani, I'm thinking to myself, Giuliani didn't want them wearing protection because he wanted to give the illusion that everything was safe and New York was open for business. And here it is 16 years later, and these firemen are dying still with all different types of cancers, which they all relate to their experience at 9/11.
Well, right. And let me just make this point really quickly. People talked about the first responders, and I think it is a good idea to separate the police from the firemen. Here's why. When you have the thin blue line, you're talking about guys who are covering each other's asses. And that's really what they're interested in doing most of the time, okay? When you're talking about firemen, like you said, it's a different mindset. It is not somebody who is out there, look, and I'm not saying that every fireman is a great human being necessarily, but there is something in them that makes them not out there to be the authority figure,
right,
who is out there legitimately wishing to make sure that lives are not lost.
Right.
Okay? That is a big difference in mentality. That's a big difference in why somebody goes into the occupation. So these are men who don't just simply cover each other's asses. These are men who actually have each other's backs and really truly should be understood as people that have the backs of the communities that they are in, no matter where they are. So I want to say that before we go any further, because
absolutely,
I think that's necessary to note here, Maria.
Absolutely. And you hear some of the firemen, especially the young Proby they're following. You know, he says, you know, I could have joined the service where I would have been killing people for my government. He said, but I'd rather be saving lives. And I think that said it all in one place. And, you know, I do remember, you know, the stories of Giuliani. You know, once the firemen had found, you know, the gold under the World Trade Center, he turned the cops on them to get them out of there. And the firemen didn't want to leave because firefighters, to them, every other firefighter is their brother. And they have a deep code to leave no man behind.
Right. Look, they were there digging out their brothers. That's what they were interested in doing, and they continued to do it even after they were told there was no way that anybody survived it. There was a point in time, which the rest of the country may not recall this, but being very local to the situation, it was understood throughout the communities that now we are no longer involved in an operation where people are going to be saved. This is just to recover bodies.
Right.
And these guys did that continuously. They were the guys on the ground first who wanted to dig through everything, even when it was still smoldering, still hot.
Right.
And the dangers to themselves they didn't consider, which, you know, unfortunately they were told it was safe there.
Right.
But look, let's not digress too much. I'm just trying to explain that that these are guys that need to be looked at a little bit differently when we talk about who might have colluded, who might have known something. I guarantee you this much. they would have never convinced the firefighters that I've ever known in New York City to be part of anything other than saving the lives of the people,
right?
But also their fellow firefighters and even bringing home their remains,
right? Was, of course, they wanted their families to have something to bury. You know, they thought that they owed it to the families. You know, and you see all the massive funerals, you know, almost every day of the firefighters, and some days it was three or four at a time. But to know that we lost 343 firefighters that day, and you're looking and you see them filming the fire chiefs. They're talking on their radios, but conveniently none of their radios or communication devices were working. I was watching it and saying, yeah, what are the chances of that? Okay. So, you know, a lot of that was deliberate. But, you know, even when you just start out, when the movie just starts out, you see the Twin Towers. You know, and it's been a long time, and a lot of young people don't even know what the Twin Towers were. But when you see the size of those buildings and you understand the structure of those buildings, there's no way in hell anybody today, we're so far removed from the shock of 9/11, that if you just look at the buildings, if you can believe that one airplane per building turned those buildings into not only total collapse, but dust, you would have to be crazy to believe the official story.
Well, you know, and for those of us who had actually been in New York City and seen not just, you know, a picture of a skyline, but had seen what those things looked like, I mean, it's just, it really staggers the imagination to think about what it is that could take down something like that. I mean, these things were monsters. And they were something that were iconic, you know, from the time I could remember being aware, because, again, I was born in 1972, right?
Right.
And the building, let's see, the second building, I think, was just completed around the time I was born, or something like that. This is almost exactly when these buildings were completed is pretty much when I came to being.
Right.
And they were iconic right away. I mean, by the time I was in school, there were... matter of fact, I remember the first lunchbox I owned being a fabricated picture of King Kong standing with 1 foot each on each of the big twin towers on the lunchbox. I have no idea why it was like that.
Right.
But, but it was one of these pictures that they did because these were iconic buildings, and King Kong was, you know, obviously a film icon and kind of fascinating for kids at the time. But the thing is that it was so much larger than even the giant ape could have possibly been. You know, he wouldn't have even been able to put 1 foot on each of the towers.
Right.
The way it was set up and everything. It's kind of an amazing thing. And you can look up the dimensions online now and see what they were. But it does nothing compared to actually experiencing being near them.
Right.
So go ahead.
Well, you know, it's interesting because you were either not born or a baby, but at the same time, I was in my late teens when they were constructing the Twin Towers. I was working in downtown Manhattan after school as a runner for the insurance companies, and there were many times I had to run into the World Trade Center, into the towers to, you know, get paperwork signed because we didn't have fax machines and all the shit you have today. And I remember the very first time I went into the tower, when you get to a certain floor, you can actually feel the building sway a little bit. And they said it was deliberately constructed that way just for balance and not to worry about it. And it's, you know, even more interesting at that point, I had never been married, and I never anticipated that I would one day be married to a firefighter, and after the firefighter, be married to an architect. So, of course, I know the code between firemen, and I also knew the difference between a controlled demolition and, you know, a one plane hitting those buildings. Because I had watched so many movies of controlled demolitions with my husband while he was going for his master's in architecture. That it was, you know, as soon as I saw the film on TV, I knew it was a controlled demolition. Nobody had to tell me anything different. But what was interesting, you're way too young, Chuck, but maybe you might have seen this old movie many years ago. It was called Towering Inferno with Paul Newman. He was one of the stars. And the premise was very similar, where fires break out in these super tall buildings and how dangerous it is for firefighters to try to, you know, fight those fires or rescue people. And I remember one of the things at the end, of course, when the heroes saved the day, I think it was Paul Newman's character who says, and they're just going to keep building them taller and taller. Like, how are we ever going to be able to fight these fires? And when you see these firemen on 9/11 going into the building, you know, all the fire chiefs were in one building. And unfortunately, one of them said, let's set up a command in Building 7. They had an idea of what they could do. But I'm sure you could see it on every one of their faces. They knew that they could put those fires out. They never anticipated those buildings coming down. And when you see the buildings where they were hit, there's no way in hell when it was hit so high up that those buildings would have come down. If anything, maybe the top of the building would have fell off. Do you know what I mean? I mean, it's just, it defies the brain that so many people have believed the official story that day, just looking at the buildings.
Well, you know, something that backs up exactly what you just said is, and I don't know how much of the audio tape you've gone through, but there is a lot of audio tape available of some of the communications that were preserved by the fire department that day. Mm-hmm. And some of those guys that were on floors not long, and I do mean minutes, moments, in fact, before the collapses, some of the guys whose lives were lost felt as though they were battling fires that they could control. That they were reporting back that, listen, I can handle this. Right. I just need maybe two more guys, or I need, I need something, but this can be dealt with. They these were professionals. These were not the new guys either. I mean,
right.
We talked about how they were following one brand new guy. Maybe he wouldn't have understood what he could handle inside of one of those towers, but these were seasoned, FDNY guys in New York City there, who knew exactly what they were looking at, who had been in many building fires before, and they felt as though they could control it, they could handle
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. They thought their whole concern was the people on the floors above the impact.
Right.
So, there was a lot, if you're really paying attention, there was a lot of truth shown in there that made sense, like them going in for above the impact. They couldn't understand why when they walked in the lobby, everything was blown out because they said the lobby looked like the plane hit the lobby, which of course they're not going to say, like William Rodriguez and other witnesses that are no longer alive, that they first blew out the basements. Watching it. And then at the end, when they show the new tower that they put up, they want to convince us. And this was the grand finale for me, Chuck. They say you don't have to basically worry about the new buildings because the new buildings have a concrete core. My head almost exploded. I said, what? I said, the old buildings had solid steel girders in the center of each building. There's no way that those buildings would have come down.
An interlocking core of steel columns, exactly. It is, again, look at the specs online. They are available for what we're talking about here. It's so bizarre to me that it's acceptable that that these things collapsed into their own footprint. It is just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, listen, if one of these buildings had toppled and done a lot of damage, for blocks and blocks and blocks because it had actually fallen
right.
on its side. Right. If that had happened, I would have thought that there was some failure in engineering here. But otherwise, this would have made a lot more sense than what we saw that day. And
right. But to believe
core,
that...
A concrete core.
A concrete wow. core. Well, isn't concrete weaker than steel? I mean, I'm not an engineer, but I'm going to take a wild guess that it is. Because when you build a building,
you can take steel and bust up concrete a lot easier than you can use concrete to bust up steel.
Right.
But, you know, again,
right. If you look at when they lay in concrete, what do they do first? They always lay those steel bars, rebar, okay, to make the concrete stronger. You know, yeah. Even if they're paving your driveway, you know rebar is going underneath. And when they said that, like, don't worry, now we have concrete in the centers, I was like, what? But of course, the official story left out the, what were there, 45 steel columns inside of each building, let alone, you know, like 20 elevators in each building. And we're supposed to believe that an airplane made out of basically aluminum created all that damage. You know, I think it was a good thing watching it so many years later, because you're so away from the shock and the bullshit, the daily trying to break it down, daily trying to make sense. And then when you see the firefighters going back at the end to start, you know, whatever, to begin the digging out, and Building 7 just collapses in seconds. How could anybody look at that and say this was a normal event? It wasn't even hit by anything. So, you know, I don't know why. I just said, you know what, we got to talk about this film at the top of the show, because we're living in the post 9/11 horror show brought to us by PNAC, brought to us by Bush Cheney, by all their friends with the fake hijackers from Saudi Arabia, the people Trump loves, let's sell them more weapons. And it was a very small story that almost got ignored this week. I mentioned it on the show, I think, yesterday, where they finally, and it was a tiny, tiny story, Chuck, where they finally admitted and put in the papers that Iran had nothing to do with 9/11.
wait a minute. You know, why are we talking about a negative here? Why is there a need to admit that something that there was no proof of has to be understood? That's like saying, you know, Maria, I was alive and in the vicinity at the time. You know, yesterday I got a story printed that said I had nothing to do with 9/11. What do you think of that? You know, I mean, that's how ludicrous this is. Why is the assumption, oh, wait a minute, I know why. Because under false pretenses, we destroyed a bystander nation in that very same region. So happens to be their neighbor. I think it was called Iraq.
Right.
Oh, okay. Is that why we're having this discussion about, and why we have to now make a statement that Iran, you know, wasn't involved in 9/11? How interesting is that in and of itself?
Well, because if it wasn't for the lawsuit, they never would have let Iran off the hook. Because don't forget, we're clearing out the Middle East for Israel. And if people don't see that, I don't know what else I can say. You know, I think this whole thing in Yemen, I think this thing in Syria, it's all about depopulating that area for a takeover.
Well, and you know what the other thing is? We've never quite gotten the prize of Iran. Because in the 1950s, Maria, we were fully involved over there. You know, there was this guy named Mohammad Mossadegh,
mm-hmm.
who, think of him what you will, was the democratically elected leader of that country. And our CIA went in completely sabotaging him, creating different false flag scenarios, propaganda wars, information wars, if you will, throughout the population to demonize him, to reinstall the royal family via a Western-educated and, in fact, in my own personal humble opinion, CIA asset, the Shah of Iran, was reinstalled over there. He goes in, brings in a brutal regime while being controlled by the CIA, in my estimation, until the people threw him out.
Right.
Okay, and when they did that, this was the rise of the Ayatollahs and all this, and of course now there's a supreme leader and an alleged president or whatever of the country at the time. But this entire situation, any hostility coming from the Iranians, is something that was bought and paid for by U.S. policy in the Middle East, going all the way back to, wait a minute, you know that guy Saddam Hussein that, you know, we wound up, deposing, hanging?
Right.
We found him, we got him, he was in a rat hole, all that. You know, at one time, that was one of our clients there, possibly CIA asset, and definitely somebody the military-industrial complex was happy to support,
mm-hmm.
during the Iran-Iraq war. Oh, Isn't that a shocker?
Right.
This continuous meddling in this area, all for the sake of pipelines, oil, and, dare I say it as well, the narcotic aspect of it, so you can keep funding your black budgets, which all of these things are part of that equation as well,
right,
has been going on now for, well, I don't know, minimally 100 years.
Right. As far as I know, that coup in Iran was 1953. And they just released the paperwork on it this year, just a few months ago, where they admitted to the coup in Iran in 1953. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Iran has good reason.
You've been digging at it for a while. You know that there was a lot of things going on there and a lot of things that were easily suggested. But like usual, 50, 60, 75 years later, when everybody's dead.
Right.
Therefore, nobody can, you know, come back and complain about the body count attached to these historical facts. This is usually when there's a minor admission. Oh, yeah, well, this right. kind of thing sort of happened. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah,
like
sort
Biden
of.
Is at the
right.
Vietnam War.
So when Iran calls us devils and demons, they have a reason to. But unfortunately, people in this country have no knowledge of history, don't want to know. And when I posted that, it was interesting because if you recall, a lot of Trumpettes or Trumpansies honestly believed that Donald Trump was going to reopen 9/11's investigation. And from the get-go, I said, there's no way in hell he's going to do that.
Well, you know, and it's interesting, the wonderful things that people ascribe to fairy tales, that this guy was an outsider, that he was, let me just make a quick list here. He was going to tell us the truth about 9/11. He was going to make sure that our vaccinations, the forced vaccinations, would come to an end because he's an anti-vax guy. Let me think here.
Bring down the price of prescription drugs, which he just sold us out on.
No, wait a minute. He was also not going to involve us in any more of these further adventures in the Middle East because he doesn't want to be an interventionalist like the neocons or the neocon by another name, which was Hillary Clinton. You know, he's not going to want to get involved in places like Yemen and
foreign wars.
Course not. He's going to spend his money on things here, and he's going to spend our money here and make America strong again. But meanwhile, he's also utilizing the drone strikes just like his predecessor.
Of course, he's amped up every one of Obama's wars, even the ones he said were a mistake. I'm going to pull them out. We're wasting money in Afghanistan. And now his best pal there, Eric Prince. I don't know if you saw it a few weeks ago, but I did mention it on my news shows. Eric Prince wants us to consider colonizing Afghanistan. So I was like, look at this, you know, the East India Tea Company on hyperspeed, still colonizing the rest of the world. And yet, you know, he's a silent campaign advisor in the Trump administration with his sister, you know, in charge of the Department of Non-Education. But everybody wants to believe. I mean, I don't think once, okay, Obama continued Bush's wars. But I don't think once Obama literally dropped bombs on a nation while he was eating a piece of chocolate cake. Okay. I mean, the insanity.
Well, you know, it's hard to say. It's hard to say. But you know what didn't happen there is that there wasn't this massive belief that, I mean, there was a belief that things would change when Bush left office and Obama came in.
Right.
That's for certain. But we were quickly dispossessed of that.
Oh, yeah.
It seems as though there were a whole lot more beliefs about the way things would change under this guy and how things were going to just get so much better, so much quicker because, well, you know, he's actually a real American.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the people that made sure that we thought that the former president was not, and here's at the end of the day, these guys are all from the same puppet factory.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let's get down to it. Look, and you could say that Trump's predecessor, was certainly a lot more palatable and respectable as a public figure.
Right.
But outside of that, you know, it's just from bad to worse to worse to worse in my estimation. And here's the thing. We're only talking about these three alleged leaders. It's all in the post-9/11 reality that that everything gets amped up, everything gets
right.
more deadly,
right.
everything is more deceptive than it ever was before, seems like to me.
Absolutely, and that was one of the things I noticed in that documentary, where they repeated a few times, they never saw fear in people's faces, like the fear on 9/11, whether it was people running in the streets, whether it was the fear of one fireman to another. And Dennis Leary, of course, and I love Dennis Leary, don't get me wrong, but Dennis Leary says, you know, and this ushered in the new reality. This is our new reality. When we're going to get attacked next? Where will the next attack be? The age of terrorism. So in other words, reiterating fear, 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 fear over what was undoubtedly an inside job. So, you know, I'm sitting there and I'm like, this is so, it was like almost like a fluff piece, you know, because they even showed the same captain that I've seen many times in videos saying we were in the, you know, we were in the lobby and it was like explosions going off. Boom, 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 boom. I'm sure you've seen that. Now, that guy's almost a star in this, but they did not include that piece of video in the documentary. You know, I was looking at what they didn't include. That
you mean the guy who's explaining that it looked like a succession of charges going off straight down the column?
Right.
That wasn't included. Yeah, I'm sure it wasn't.
No, they did make a big deal of, you know, carrying out the priest and bringing him to his, you know, church and whatnot. And you know, he was victim number. That was another thing. When they carry out the priest, and I'm not saying he wasn't a good guy, but when they carry him out, they make it very clear. They take him to the church. They put him on the altar, and they made him victim number 0001. And I said, oops, the Jesus Christ martyr. They made the priest the victim number one. So when you look at all the different mind control things that were happening there, I was like, look at this. So anyway, Chuck, we got to go to a short break. We're coming back, and guess what we're going to talk about next? We're going to talk about either way you look at it. It was either a G20. I say it was a G19. And Donald Trump Jr., who's proven to be as big an idiot as his father, maybe even more so. So stay with us. We'll be right back. Hi, Maria here, and I have a message due to the pressure of the times we're living in. I'm calling on all students and millennials to get the education they need to fight the fascism taking over our world. I've made a special subscription offer for students and for seniors on a limited budget. For just $9.99 a month, you can subscribe and get that education. Over 500 hours of real education that's necessary to understand the world, the problems, and the solutions. Remember, knowledge is power. Together, you can change the world, but to do so, you must be informed of what's really going on and have real facts to support you in your endeavors. It's time for all the grandmothers to take a stand and teach the younger generation what their life could be and how to get there. Help me help you. One person cannot do it alone, and the guidance you seek is right here at www.maria.net, M-E-R-I-A.net. Your generation is the generation we've been waiting for, so let me help you. Thanks for listening. Okay, welcome back to Hell and High Water with my excellent co-host Chuck Ocelli. Chuck's recently started a pay-to-listen site like mine so we can be uncensored, so we can tell you the truth, and we can be truly independent. So please support his work too, ocelli.com. I recommend very few people out there, and Chuck is one of them. Chuck, before the break, of course, we talked about 9/11, and I know people say, why are you still talking about 9/11? Because 9/11 created just what they needed to put in and anchor in a police state, their push ahead, their global police state, and their one world disorder. And luckily, you can see people all around the world, not so many here in America, although we have had nothing but protests since Trump stole the election, and they're all stolen elections. But you see in Europe, especially at the G20, man, people went nuts. People have had it, and they think they're starting to realize who the true enemies are. And as long as the inequality from our fearful leaders continues, I see it only getting worse. I don't know how much of the G20 you followed, but I'm going to call it the G19 because I think Trump was in a coma for most of it.
Well, you know, that's something I'm starting to question about. And here's the thing. There's been no shortage of criticism for this guy since the day they told us that he had been selected, right? But let's be honest for a moment. If you take a look at this behavior and you examine it objectively, there's a lot of questions one could have. I mean, I'm at the point of wondering if he's not in need of a physical examination to see if he's not deteriorating mentally, which can happen. I don't make this statement about a lot of people, but I'm wondering at this point in time. Now, is he the perfect leader for the time? Almost. For the people that I see still supporting him, certainly it would be someone who is cognitively handicapped in some way that would be the perfect leader for them.
Right.
But putting that aside, you know, we have to continue to look at 9/11 because, first of all, a satisfactory answer as to how this all went down and who really was the perpetrator has not been offered into the public court of opinion for honest discourse yet. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and don't tell me about the 9/11 commission that didn't even bother to release its documentation and that was really just another dog and pony show to put a rubber stamp on a preconceived conclusion to a narrative, all right?
Right.
Let's not talk about that. But you know what? The reality in and of itself was changed from that point. And people that are too young to remember a time before, it was necessary, seemingly, for your local police department to have armored vehicles.
Right.
You had to live in a state where terrorism was a consideration, even for your local water supply. You know, that wasn't something that went on in this country until very recently. Again, post-9/11 reality. But when you go and you look at this G20 situation, first thing is, Maria, You've looked at these over the years many times, and I've got to be honest with you, I only started looking at this particular type of conference a few years ago because I always thought of it as, well, it's just business as usual. The people in charge get together and they have discussions, and why do I even care? Used to be my particular position.
All right.
However, this is entertaining because even among the thugs, even among, and I do mean thugs, and I'm using that word quite advisedly, even among the thugs who seem to run other countries and seem to be stealing the wealth from their own people, you notice there was a bit of a difference in the way they handled a guy named Trump, mm-hmm. Who's, you know, supposed to be the American thug, right?
Right. Well, there was, listen, everybody, he's the laughingstock of the world. Everybody knows he's crazy, except his fans, who I think have had too much fluoride in their water. You know, everything he says is coming out of ignorance. He knows nothing about nothing. I've never seen anybody as ignorant. I mean, I'm not a big history buff, but even I know Frederick Douglass has been dead for over 100 years. And everything that he comes out with, he changes his mind and changes his position every 10 minutes. Nobody wants to pay attention to that. He's threatening and menacing to people that are allies because he doesn't know they're our allies. And how about the fact that he has his daughter sit in for him? And the only way we know about that is because a Russian took a picture of her in that scene and then released the picture. He still doesn't see how Russia's playing him like a fiddle because he thinks he's the king of the art of the deal. Imagine if if Barack Obama went to the G20 and put his black daughter in that chair, what kind of shit you would be seeing all over social media?
Oh, well, you know, could Barack Obama have possibly gotten away with, first of all, putting his daughter or any family member in an advisory position in the White House like this guy did? How about his son-in-law? Let's just say Obama's got a relative who isn't even a blood relative, but somebody who's married into the family, who's just a brilliant person and therefore is going to be able to settle things because they've done so well in the private sector. I think the internet would actually suffer a complete meltdown if Barack Obama had ever done some of the stuff that the new black being orange man there has gotten himself away with.
Right. I don't know how many. I believe all of them are his handlers. I think Melania is his number one handler for Russia. This is just my own intuition. I think his daughter and son-in-law, the son-in-law, Kushner, is obviously his Israeli Zionist handler working on behalf of Netanyahu. And his daughter, well, I don't know. I think she's his real wife. Maybe she's his daughter wife. But, you know, let's not forget Ivanka is very good friends with Putin's girlfriend. So these people are all in bed with each other, literally, including Netanyahu, who sleeps in Kushner's bed when he visits. And you can't keep saying that there's no Russian collusion here because there's at least 20 stories now, 20, you know, so many different people, even the lawyer Donald Trump Jr. just handled, is connected to Russia. The guy he's picking for the lead of the FBI is also connected to Russia. It, to me, it's like, who isn't connected to Russia in this administration? So,
well, yeah, isn't that fascinating from a guy who thinks that he... But see, here's what the problem is. People play chess, you know, and people play three-dimensional chess, and this is the way politics and business are done. But when you got somebody who's playing tiddlywinks on the chessboard, it doesn't make a chess. Mm-hmm. And this guy thinks if he ingratiates himself to certain people, that'll get the job done. Now, that might work when you're trying to deal with people that are competing for, oh, I don't know, contracts that might be lucrative for them one way or another, that are going to get them into a pool of money that's going to have a lot of tax breaks attached to it. You know, that might work on some level. But what he fails to understand is that the Russian nation and all of his people either do understand this quite well or are also just as ignorant as him. I can't figure out which. You see, that's the interesting game here. You don't know if this is a miscalculation or just sheer stupidity. I'm not sure which one it is. The Russian Federation is not a friendly nation to us, with good cause, okay? And this idea that, there's no collusion, but yet I'm going over there to get dirt on my political enemies from a foreign nation. I say again, imagine Barack Obama going to, oh, I don't know, let's pick a place. You know?
All right.
But
China, let's say China.
Barack Obama went to Russia to get information on, let's think for a minute, oh, Mitt Romney. Okay, during the campaign, but he didn't go there. He sent some of his people that work for him to go there to get this information. But the information turned out not to be so good. So it wasn't very useful or helpful. Does this look okay to you, Internet? I'm telling you, Twitter would have absolutely crashed. Facebook would have gone into sludge meltdown.
Right.
Over all of the memes that would have been out there about how the foreign agent Obama is dealing with foreign nations.
Mm-hmm.
But because, you know, a guy is a reality TV star, and he tells the world that he's rich, which we still don't know how much money he really has. Although I guarantee you he's got a lot more now than he did previous to January, because he's making money while he's there, I guarantee you.
Oh, yeah, lots of money on his golf courses, on his Mar-a-Lago, and he's even threatening a lawsuit if they take away the PGA from one of his golf courses. So he's a scumbag. I mean, anybody could see that he is. I mean, listen, I grew up in New York at the same time Trump was coming up. I mean, you know, remember, Trump's just a few years older than me. Hard to believe, because if I looked like him, I think I'd throw myself off the top of the Twin Towers right now. But everybody in New York knew he was a slumlord, a racist, and a scumbag, and a liar, and a cheat, and a con man. Okay, and those were his good qualities. So, you know, to look at him now and believe that somehow he changed, you know, my mother used to tell me men don't change, the leopard doesn't change their spots. And all this, you know, my mama also taught me where there's smoke, there's fire. I mean, how much more smoke? This guy's got more pyroclastic smoke around him than the towers did. Sooner or later, it's like, what's going to happen? I mean, why is it that the it seems to me the entire Congress, you know, everybody's saying, why is the GOP still backing him? Why aren't they doing anything? Well, what the hell are the Democrats doing? Because people still believe, you know, that there's a difference between the two parties. They all get fed at the same trough.
Yeah, that is the problem. And you know, memory serves me that in the 1970s, when the guy who is now in the White House was still working for his father, that there were issues in New York City over him and his father being slumlords together and actually being racist, you know. So you heard the loaded things that Maria just said. I'll tell you what, do a little internet search. If you dig hard enough, if they haven't totally scrubbed it from the internet, they had legal actions taken against Trump and his father about exactly this as early as the 1970s. I just want to note that for the record.
Right, and also, please, everybody, go to YouTube and just put in Dutch documentary on Trump. There's two. Watch both of them. Somebody needs to hand that over to our intel services so they can immediately get him out of office, because the Dutch actually did a better job than what's happening in the people that are supposed to be protecting the American public. It just seems to me everybody's more worried about keeping their jobs and party alignment than what's best for the American people.
Well, look, you want to take a swipe at a sacred cow and then bring it back to Trump real quick? In 2004, a guy named Ronald Reagan died of Alzheimer's, okay?
All right.
Now, Ronald Reagan is this iconic figure in GOP history, you know, the great Reagan years, all this
stuff.
Oh,
yeah,
trickle this and trickle that, and, you know, who's afraid of the big bad bat? But the reality is that that Reagan set up things to be wrecked by his successor, Bush, who was probably in control of him during the last part of his presidency, easily anyway, if not during the entire alleged Reagan presidency. I contend that his Alzheimer's was already taking hold after the physical injury inflicted on him by the assassination attempt. Do I have proof for that? No. But here's the thing. I will tell you that there's a marked difference in Reagan's behavior in the second presidency, where he seems to be a bit lost, a bit befuddled, kind of a little out of it now and then, and that is publicly observable. We see that now with a President Trump who seems to not quite understand the circumstances sometimes, gets himself lost off a tarmac and turning to try and shake hands with people and everything else,
right.
Seems to be a little dazed, a little confused. I'm not sure that this guy is fit for, well, I know he's not fit for office. I mean, if there was a moral scale here, he's not fit for office. But let's get down to it. This guy could be quite the useful idiot.
Right.
To the intelligence agencies. Now, you questioned, why is it the intelligence agencies are not stepping in, doing their jobs, finding out what's actually going on, and seeking to undermine and remove this guy? Why is that not being brought out to the American public? I'll tell you why. Because he's a useful idiot to these people, and I'm telling you that that they're going to keep him in place as long as they can. Because he is the entertainment to keep us distracted while the kleptocracy continues
right.
to do what it does. And I do mean continues, because this is nothing new.
No, it isn't.
Okay?
You know, you look at Reagan, you're talking about Reagan, who, you know, his wife was against stem cell research until her husband developed Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I was, you know, a full-grown adult during the Reagan years. And I could see he was senile. There was I just looked at it as senile, but I don't know what the difference is between that and Alzheimer's. And you know George Bush Sr., who always wanted to be president, was running the country, just like Cheney was running the country under Jr., just as I think Mike Pence, who is now collecting a lot of money from private donors and having secret meetings and dinners, is ready to become the president under Trump. It's like history continues to repeat itself. My opinion, Chuck, the GOP fanatics, fake Christians, wanted Pence in office to begin with. But they knew no one would vote for him. He destroyed Indiana. His own people hate his guts. And no one's ever heard of him. And he's a religious fanatic. You know, we don't need health care. We just need to pray to Jesus. That's one of his comments. So to me, you see the same thing happening over and over again. And let's not, you know, let's not leave out the fact they're all controlled by the same people that have controlled every president since John Kennedy was killed.
Well, you know, that is the exact point here. And the reason why I bring up the Alzheimer's thing is because there is the possibility of a 20-year window in which you begin suffering from the disease to the time of your death. Now, when you bring up senility, Alzheimer's is one of those things that you can split off from the spectrum of what we used to basically generally refer to as going senile. How about we'll use that general term and see if it works here. If you take a look at the behaviors objectively, I mean, I even step outside of your hate of the man or step outside of your belief in, oh, make America great again, and I wanted an outsider who wasn't an outsider, but, oh, he's a rich guy, so he knows how to do things, the art of the deal. But step away from it for a moment. Look at him objectively. Tell me you don't see somebody who doesn't fully recognize what's going on.
Right, he has to be steered. Right, he has to be steered. They steer him. He walked past his limo when he got off the plane. They had to turn him around. He was lost on the stage at the G20. They had to turn him around. Right. You know, why wasn't he sitting in the meetings? He was dozing at one of the meetings. And then in one meeting, he decides to put his daughter there. You know, this was the guy who ran on Hillary Clinton has no stamina. I have all this stamina. Well, he's going down at the speed of light. But on the other hand, Chuck, you and I didn't even know each other most of the years I've done my show. Many years ago, I talked to, I believe it was Dr. Michael Greger, and we were talking about Alzheimer's. And his contention was that a lot of Alzheimer's is actually misdiagnosed Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease, mad cow disease. And he said, you know, you could get it from a bad hamburger you ate 15 years ago. And I'll tell you what, once I went vegan, I was counting the years, okay? I was counting the years, and I'm like, once that 15th year passed, I went, phew, I'm safe, right? But look at Trump's diet. I understand the White House chef wants to, either he did quit or he wants to quit, because Trump only eats fast food. He eats crap. Constantly, you know, Kentucky Fried Chicken and crap. So maybe he doesn't have Alzheimer's, maybe he actually has Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease. But unless, you know, these 22 psychologists that are saying, you know, postulating on how mentally unfit he is, unless he actually gets checked and tested, which I doubt he's going to do, as you said, he's a useful idiot. This is what we have with this hand on the nuclear buttons.
Well, and another thing to consider is this, and I've talked to a lot of forensic pathologists who perform autopsies constantly, and what they will tell you is they have noted for many years that one of the things that happens when you even tangentially sort of begin to dissect the brain of someone who has died having what they call Alzheimer's, you'll also find that, yes, there is profound brain damage, but high concentrations of a little thing called aluminum usually are deposited in those who are, you know, afflicted with Alzheimer's. Okay, so isn't that interesting as well? You know that thing they use as an anti-clumping agent in baby formula powders? You know that thing that seems to be coming from the chemtrails they tell us don't exist?
Right.
You know, so it could be a combination of mad cow disease and this sort of aluminum-based strangeness that kind of drills these little holes in the brain, does damage to the brain.
Right. Well, it's interesting you say that, because just this morning I went outside and they literally were spraying the grid. You can't miss it. It looks like the letter H repeating itself in the sky. And I took a short video of it and posted it on Facebook. And I said, everybody in town, I had to go to urgent care this weekend because my head was splitting. I mean, I thought, I didn't know what the hell. And the doctor said the allergies coupled with the smoke up here, everybody's got this. But I look outside today and I said, look at what they're spraying the day after Nikola Tesla's birthday. You know, I guess this is their way of celebrating him by, you know, laying out the chemtrail grid.
But the reason why I bring this up, though, is that all of these things are possibilities. Why is it that we're having to speculate about it? Because, you know, the legal and medical societies both are not you know, remotely looking to tell us the truth. And you're right. They probably will not test Trump, even if he goes to prison, which I doubt, by the way. All these people that are celebrating thinking that they're going to remove him because, you know, he needs to be impeached and let's get him, you know, lock him up and all of this kind of nonsense. Let me tell you something. I would bet just about anything I have that this guy is not going to be prosecuted or persecuted properly for anything. Because what happens to the people that really break the law at the highest level?
They get pardoned. Even then, they get pardoned. Remember with Nixon, you know, he got pardoned by Gerald Ford.
Yes, he did.
So,
yes, he did.
And Nixon was crazy, too. So when you look at this, it's like, oh, my God. My sense is, and we only have a minute left, Chuck. I don't think Trump ever anticipated winning, had no idea of what he was walking into. And I think that he'll end up resigning and use the excuse he doesn't want his family being picked on anymore.
Or mission accomplished. You know, I've already achieved everything. Because he keeps telling us about all the great things that he's done without doing anything.
So, I know.
Hey, I change now.
I know.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Well, Chuck, yeah. Thanks so much for joining me today. And we'll talk more, I'm sure, next month. God only knows what stories we'll have between now and then if we're all still here. And again, everybody, please get over to Ocelli.com. Support the few people out here. We don't do this for any other reason except the fact that we are true patriots. And we don't take sides. We just call it the way it is. Thanks again, Chuck.
Thank you.
Take care.
Take care.
Okay, I'll be back tomorrow with news. I mean, Thursday, with news of Planet of the Apes. And I got to tell you, it's hard for me to even tell the days apart anymore. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting the show. If you're listening to this elsewhere, please make a donation. Please subscribe to the show. That's the only revenue that we have. I'll see you guys then.
Thank you for listening and supporting The Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.